First of all, I didn't know what does it mean to be a refugee, because it's kind of a feeling that you become as if it's a certain species. People and refugees. That was what I was feeling about myself.
We pick up William's story as he prepares to flee his homeland. Fearing for his safety, William quickly gets a tourist visa to come to the Netherlands in hopes of being granted asylum. So as not to raise suspicions with those around him, he uses his academic pursuits to his advantage.
One of my weapons was that everybody knew that I love to study. Of course, nobody knew why I'm coming here. I said, I'm going to study if it will be possible. I go like a tourist, if I will be able to give my papers, etc., some kind of things.
Did you use that excuse with everybody?
Almost, yes, everybody.
Family?
Yeah.
You knew this was a one-way ticket?
Yes, I knew that that was a one-way ticket.
How do you say goodbye to family and friends?
If I say that I even don't remember that, it's like vanished from my mind. I tried not to say goodbye.
He says a lot of his friends were angry at his decision not to tell them he was leaving. The closest he came to letting anybody know why he'd decided to go was a letter that he wrote on the way to the airport. Just before entering, William gave the letter to a friend that had accompanied him and instructed him to give the letter to his brother and another close friend of theirs. Before boarding the flight, William texted his friend to make sure he still had the letter.
I wrote to my friend, hey, don't forget to give the letter. And then he told me, which letter? The letter, the paper that I gave you in the airport. And then he said, oh my God. I said, what happened? He said, I thought it's garbage. I threw it away in the airport, in a trash can. And then the airplane is moving, and I was thinking, oh my God. If I would see this in cinema, I would think, oh, can't happen in the real life. Can't be real, but it was like that. And then he said, oh, if you want, I can go back to the airport. He said, no, of course, no. How you can go back to the airport?
I ask William to be more specific about the contents of the letter he wrote. And he tells me he did reveal more personal information about himself.
Yeah, not openly, but kind of things, explanation that I live, that it's necessary, it's crucial, it's vital for me, for my safety, that kind of things. To make a bit picture for people who, in my opinion, wouldn't understand me, why I did it without telling them anything, etc.
So what do you think your brother and this person make then of your leaving and your never returning? What do you think they...
I don't know. It's so difficult to say. Especially now, because so many things are already changed.
You could have gone to a lot of countries. Why did you pinpoint the Netherlands to come to initially?
I had a feeling all my life that here is the most tolerant and most safe place for me. I wouldn't say that I belonged to that society ever. I didn't belong to them. I always belonged to this society where I am now, the Netherlands, and the way of thinking of here. In my country of origin, even if I would be a majority, one of the majority group there, I still wouldn't belong there. I'm not angry my homeland, but I feel a bit sorry and a bit, it's a pity that it's like that. I also had there my work, my job, and my position in the society, but I didn't have myself there. And then I chose to put everything behind, to leave everything behind, to find myself. And that's why I chose to come to the Netherlands to try everything from zero.
William arrives in the Netherlands and begins the process of seeking asylum on account of the sexual discrimination and danger he encountered in his home country. Ultimately, he would spend an entire year living in 5 different refugee camps before getting an apartment of his own. Upon arriving at his first refugee camp, he's immediately faced with the realities of being inserted into the system.
You don't choose with whom to live. You live in one room with people who... There were even people who were like drinking and eating in bed and drinking alcohol. And then when you enter a room and then that alcohol, then you should sleep there. And you can't fight with everyone, or you can't argue with everyone. I know that people are coming with a lot of also traumas, etc. I was also with trauma. A lot of people were traumas. Traumas can be different stages, from different countries, different cultural background, different educational background, everything. And you have to live together in one place. It can take days, it can take weeks, it can take months. There were people who were living already 3 years. I knew a woman who was living in a camp 12 years. And I faced also discrimination there.
But when you said you faced discrimination, because of
the sexuality.
William speaks eloquently about the feeling of leaving behind the things that define your identity, that connect you with your history, your childhood, and upbringing.
I was just a gray pencil, a gray color, like a baby, like a child, like a newborn child. I mean, newborn person. That feeling I also had. It was a strange feeling for me. It was unusual. You are a person, you want to be recognized as a person, as somebody with a history that you had or your life. You did this, you did that. And at some point you think, is this what I was thinking about? Okay, I'm safe, that's the most important. We are human, we also have other needs. It's not only to eat, to sleep, and then to be safe. And then starts the period when you start to prove the society that you are someone that had life before coming here, that it's not that here starting my life. I had an interesting life till the last moments. And of course, with all difficulties, etc., but still, I had my life. For me, that was one of the difficult moments in my life, because at that time, I remember my grandmother from my mother's side, she was 87 years old. She was already sick, and I knew that I will never see her back. I will never see her again. I knew that. And when I left in August, and I was here in October, she passed away.
So with thoughts of the people he'd willingly left behind constantly with him, all the while experiencing the frustration of starting over and enduring more sexual discrimination in the camps, William must confront his past in order to start fresh. He explains that the most difficult part of the asylum process for him was reliving his most difficult moments during his interviews with the immigration authorities.
To again re-experience what happened. And of course, after those talks, after those moments, you leave a part of yourself inside of that room with the migration worker. You leave a part of you. You go out of that room half yourself, half person.
This is the first I've heard someone describe the process this way and in such stark terms. It's as if William divested himself of the experiences that led him to become a refugee and, in doing so, created a huge void and made room within himself for something entirely new. He goes on to say that filling the emptiness and making himself whole again in a completely new country comes with its share of dangers and risks.
That you can try to fill that big gap with things that can hurt you, that can damage your life, especially in an open and in a free society. Freedom, it's also something dangerous for people who didn't have freedom or life.
When I ask him for specifics, he talks about the temptations of sexuality, free from the conservative, closed society where he was raised.
You need, or you think that you need to try things that you were thinking about, but that things can be not the same in reality how you were thinking that they could be. Yeah, this is where people, especially from that conservative, close societies, should be careful about. Things that could give me temporary satisfaction in a short term, but in a long term could damage my life. Maybe it wasn't for nothing that I came here when I was already 30 years old, and a lot of things in my head I knew that where I should be careful or not, etc., etc., that helped me also. And also criminal life, because you don't have here friends, you don't have here You don't know many people here, and it's very easy to involve you in different groups of people and then to use you, to damage you, to damage your life. To become a victim is very easy because you are also vulnerable. Vulnerable group in a vulnerable group.
We'll be right back. Stay with us.
While in those countries, there you do things that you don't want to do. I found out for myself that freedom for me is not to do things that I don't want to do. That is freedom for me.
The further away from his homeland he gets, and the longer he lives in the refugee camps, William tells me he started to realize, understand, and define for himself these newly acquired freedoms.
I'm free not to do things that I don't want to do. That I'm not pressured and I'm not forced to have a girlfriend because I don't want. I'm not pressured to marry.
You didn't have sort of like relationships when you were there, right? That, like, do you think people made something of that? Like, do you think people were like, well, why is William still single?
Yeah, of course. That's for those countries, that's one of the questions. If it's a New Year or if it's a birthday, if it's something and people are gathering, the first time, where you are married? Where are you going to marry? You are not married. Why? Or you are sick? Or, oh, maybe the second. Oh, it's better to be sick.
And so then did you ever have to make those excuses?
Yeah, of course. All my life. Oh, it's not the time. I still need to have my own space. It will come. We will see. I can't find a good person that we match. But yeah, at some point you become so tired already. You don't want that.
As I'm listening to William, I'm trying to imagine what it was like for him to repress his sexuality, his feelings, and his true self for so many years. What he tells me next sheds a lot of light on how much his perspective on his own sexuality has changed by virtue of the move he made.
When I came here, I remember once I was talking with someone and I said, you know, I have a problem. And I mentioned it and the person said, what are you talking about, William? It's not a problem. And I was thinking, whoa, that's true. It's not a problem. But, you know, even coming here already 30, 31 years old, that time I was even thinking that that's a problem. And I understood, okay, there was a problem, but here it's not a problem.
While he awaited his residence permit, he used the time to improve his knowledge of Dutch and eventually obtain a second master's degree in environmental resource management. With a place of his own to live in and his residence permit in hand, he went to work for an environmental organization in the Netherlands. His focus changed, however, when the war in Ukraine began.
3 years ago, when the war started in Ukraine and a lot of Ukrainians had to flee to come to the Netherlands. And I also speak Russian. And that time the invasion was that eastern part of Ukraine that a lot of people and then were also speaking. And also in Ukraine, of course, they communicate with Russian. They speak also Russian. And then I was thinking, let's see. And then I found out that open job in Dutch Council for Refugees, and there I applied for the position to give support, legal support to the refugees from Ukraine.
There is something so poetic and admirable in what William has done. He's put himself through the refugee process and is now helping the very people with whom he once shared a room. William tells me he's certain that the day will come when he will speak to larger audiences about what exactly happened to him before he left his homeland. He says his talks will be about the critical importance of self-acceptance, no matter your gender, sexuality, religion, ethnicity, or age.
I have a lot of things to tell to have an influence on people's way of thinking. I feel that I can have that influence when the moment comes that I talk about it.
As we're wrapping up, I ask William what his grandmother would say to him if she could see him now.
Well, she would definitely say that she's proud of me and that she would say well done. She would say that I would like you to have a lot of children, so there would be other Williams, like small Williams.
Do you want to have?
Of course I want and I will. Definitely. And I would say I'm going even, like I planned. I will do that and I will have children. I definitely know that my children will be one of the happiest children ever. And my parents will be proud of their grandchildren, of course. And I will be proud of my children whoever they will be good people, but whoever they will choose to be in the society, in as a sexuality, etc., for me will be no matter, and I will always support them. I started to accept myself a couple of years ago, fully. I would call myself a successful person and also lucky. Lucky because I'm here, and successful because when I was in danger, I could survive still. And the people who had a close connection to me, they also were not in danger.
And in case you were wondering what William's new piano sounds like, well, you're actually listening to it right now. This is a piece that William created in the moments just before I left. As I'm listening, I'm struck by photos of William's parents and grandmother sitting atop the piano, watching over him as he plays. In a way, it feels like he's playing for them, writing his own melody, striking out on his own path, telling his story of self-acceptance and creating a beautiful trajectory for his life, free of the restrictions and limitations from his youth. I'm reminded of the way his grandmother stood up for him as a child, saying, "Let him play what he wants to play. Play, William. Play, play, play. And look what comes of that." That's all for this week. Thanks for joining us. We want to hear from you. If you know of someone who might like to be a guest on the show, we'd love to speak with them. If you know of an organization doing work to help refugees, we will promote them. Drop me a note. My email address is lee@startwithyourname.com. I look forward to hearing from you and hope you'll join us next week when we talk with Lena. The Start With Your Name podcast is hosted and produced by me. Our theme song is by Oleksandr Savochka, with additional music by Luca Francini, Gavidon Levkin Bardusha, Sergei Chetvertnik, Denis Gajchuk, Zakhar Velaha, Soulbox, and Oleg Kirilkov. Special thanks to Sophie Fondenenk and William. See you soon.